Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
So welcome to the PJLA webinar, which is an overview of the California ELAP regulations versus the TNI Environmental Laboratory 2016 standard. During this overview, we'll be going over the TNI standard and some requirements. And at the end of the webinar, I'll go over some resources, both from TNI and from PJLA. Just a few notes about what this webinar does not cover. It assumes participants are already familiar with the articles of the California regulations, so we will not be going over those requirements. It will not include a discussion of the accreditation process itself or a true comparison between the California regulations and the TNI requirements. The intended audience of this webinar is laboratories that have maintained a quality management system compliant to the California regulations, however, not to other standards, for example, the ISO, IEC 17025, or the TNI standards. The focus of this webinar is to provide an indication of the potential level of effort to update a laboratory quality management system for compliance to the TNI requirements. So what is the TNI? I always tell people it's an acronym within an acronym. So TNI stands for, let me get my little pointer out here. TNI stands for the NELAC Institute, and NELAC stands for the National Environmental Laboratories Accreditation Conference, which is part of the National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program. So you might see areas where something refers to NELAP versus NELAC. They are two different things, but they're related. The standard we're going to be looking at is the Volume 1 of the TNI standards, which is the management and technical requirement for laboratories performing environmental analysis. There are additional volumes, but for the purpose of this, we'll be focusing on Volume 1. Volumes 2 through 4 are more for accrediting bodies or PT providers. However, I do encourage laboratories to purchase the Volume 2 because it identifies the requirements for accrediting bodies, so the laboratory will know what the requirements are and what's expected of them when they assess a laboratory for accreditation. Another information about the TNI standard is it does include the ISO IEC 17025-2005 requirements with some exceptions identified in the standard. However, the new version of that standard is 2017. So accreditation from TNI does not include the current 17025 standard. It's only part of the 2006 standard is the older version of 17025. So if a laboratory wants accreditation of 17025, it is a separate standard. A lot of things are still the same, but there's also some differences. I'm not going to go over the whole accreditation process, but I will mention that by 2023, all laboratories, regardless of technology, are expected to meet at least TNI minus 2, which I'll discuss, and be assessed by third party assessments, and non-governmental accrediting bodies are part of the approved way of having assessments. So PJLA is an approved non-governmental accreditation body that can perform assessments for accreditation for California ELAP. The two options that we talk about here that this webinar focuses on is TNI minus 2, which is basically the TNI standard minus two exceptions that we'll talk about later, and then the TNI full, which uses that TNI 2016 standard. The other note here is that the TNI minus two is basically just an audit that the TPA is providing a service for, and it's not an accreditation, and the TNI full is an accreditation and will accompanied by a scope with the PJLA symbol. So as a result, through this webinar, I might have brief mentions of PJLA policies, but they're only applicable when a laboratory chooses TNI full. Just an important note here, When I was putting this presentation together, there was a lot I wanted to share and communicate and warn labs about, but it was going to be hours and hours long, so I had to really cut it down. So before we go through the requirements we're going to talk about, I just want to let you know there are significant potential gaps that warrant communication. However, there's not a lot of time here, so my whole purpose is to give participants an indication of the level of effort that's going to have to be put in place if a laboratory has only had a quality management system compliant to the California regs. It does not substitute for going out there and reading the requirements, getting additional training, and making sure the quality management system is fully implemented. I'm also not one of those people that like to read slides. I don't feel like I need to read to people, and I'm sure most participants don't feel like they need to be read to. So a lot of times, as you've probably already noticed, I do more talking than what's on the slide. So, you know, when you get, you'll want to download the slides so you can kind of go back through them and talk to them, because I just cover key points. But again, the point is, we just want to let you be aware of the type of level of effort to update policies and procedures to be in compliant with the TNI. I just picked some common findings and areas where I really felt like there would be a higher potential of gaps in a quality management system. And just another mention, if you're only used to the California regulation articles, there's a lot more prescriptive and detailed information of requirements in the TNI standard. There's a lot of things like define, you need a policy, things need to be documented, there needs to be a procedure clearly described or recorded or retained. So when you're going through the TNI standard in preparation to upgrade your system, make sure you capture all this information and it's part of a documented quality management system. When an assessor comes in for an initial accreditation, they do anticipate to find some nonconformities here and there. However, if there's evidence or no evidence that the laboratory has really updated their system, it could impact the assessment. The assessor could have to just cancel the assessment. And it could impact the laboratory's timeline to achieve accreditation. Assessors need to confirm implementation in addition to a documented quality management system. So you want to make sure that if you're upgrading to the TNI, that you implement a quality management system and document it before the assessment. Some things might seem a little intimidating too. But if the laboratory uses the resources available that we provide at the end of the webinar and dedicates time, it will be successful and there'll be a lot of benefit associated with the improvements. So laboratories that have been part of the California ELAP are used to these articles that existed before mid-2020. 2020, they updated them to newer articles that mainly pointed to the TNI with some exceptions. So what I'm going to do is talk about the TNI. There's seven modules. Module one and two are required by all laboratories. Module one is proficiency testing, and module two is the general requirements for quality system. Within those are the two exceptions that we'll be talking about if a laboratory chooses TNI minus two versus the full TNI. Then there's modules three through seven. Those are dependent on a laboratory scope. So if a laboratory does not do asbestos, module three would not apply. I will talk a little bit about module four, just to give laboratories an idea of the detailed requirements within the modules, but I won't be talking about three, five, six, or seven. I'm just trying to give laboratories an idea of the requirements, you know, that TNI has versus using the California regs, which did not provide those details. So the first thing we're talking about at module one, this has one of the exceptions for the TNI minus two option. There's a few sections, four to eight. Sections one to three, I won't be talking about because it's just introductions and definitions. So module four is when the requirements start in the module. You'll want to, you know, read through this and make sure you're compliant and update your program for it. But there's just, you know, different things I'm going to cover here, but I can't cover all of it. One of them, 4.1, is that the TNI does require use of TNI approved proficiency testing providers. They do have a list on their website, so you'll want to make sure you go out to the TNI website and look at what PT providers are approved for providing PTs. Another item is that they have some sample handling requirements. PTRLs might be a new terminology for you, and it's really important to understand that process. And then also, they require analysis of PT samples in the same manner. So laboratories can't be adding QC, changing QC, modifying the prep. You know, for soil samples, sometimes labs use a higher volume that they bring out of the soil sample when they're doing PTs to make sure they account for heterogeneity. You can't do that. So laboratories have to treat the PT sample in exactly the same manner as a normal sample, with exceptions where a PT provider has directions in their submittal regarding how to deal with the sample. Another note is laboratories need to be aware of all requirements, not just the TNI. So the TNI does allow PTs to be each analyte technology matrix combination, but EPA drinking water requires analyte method matrix combination. The other thing about TNI is if a laboratory chooses to report by technology, not by method, if they do get an unacceptable result for a method and a technology, then all methods for that technology get the non-acceptable result and are dealt with accordingly regarding accreditation. I mentioned the PTRL. This is really important to understand. There's a lot of discussion in it in the standards, so the laboratories will need to go into the standard and really understand it. It's important because it's how the laboratory reports their PT, and if they report it differently, they could end up in a non-acceptable result when the result was actually ideally acceptable. So for example, here, if the laboratory reports by their LOQ, because it was non-detect to them, but their LOQ is greater than the PTRL, then they could end up with a non-acceptable result if that result happened to be above the PTRL but less than the LOQ. I know it's a lot of acronyms that's going to have to be learned, you know, while trying to implement the TNI standard. The PTRL values are all available on the TNI website, but be aware they do change. So when you implement your program and you download the PTRL so you're aware what they are, just make sure you're always going out there and checking, or select that you're notified when they change. The exception in module one is basically that if you go to TNI minus two, PTs only have to be once a year. If you go with TNI full, they're twice a year. If you choose TNI minus two, make sure you're very aware of the article requirements. If you're TNI full, make sure you're aware of these requirements. There's many different requirements. There's has to be two passing out of the most recent three attempts. There's different timelines about how far apart they can be analyzed or how close apart they can be analyzed if you're trying to get an initial accreditation or doing corrective action PTs. And pay attention to closing date versus analysis date, because some of these days are based on closing date and some of these days are based on analysis date. The exception in the TNI minus two points to an exception to section 5 and section 8. The section 8 of the TNI standard basically just points to 5.1 and 5.2 regarding the passing results and the different timelines. So make sure that you update your program to have these requirements and the different timelines, so you make sure you're in compliant with everything. The module one proficiency testing also has these sections 6 through 8 and 4 for record retention. I'm not going to go into everything just for the sake of time, but just make sure you're aware of these requirements and you update policies and procedures accordingly to make sure they're captured and implemented. If a laboratory chooses to go TNI full, this is an area where PGLA and any accrediting body that you choose also has their own policies on proficiency testing. So it if you go TNI full and you go to a non-governmental accrediting body, there'll be other policies and procedures applicable to PTs. So for module two, we'll discuss the quality system general requirements. This also has one of the exceptions if a laboratory chooses to go to TNI minus two. This module has two sections. One is general requirements and the other one is technical requirements. It's almost ideally identical to the 1705-2005 version, with the exception of 4.16 doesn't exist. It's a data integrity investigations, does not exist in the 2005 version, and 5.5 is equipment versus calibration requirements. But if you're already familiar with the 17025 standard, this might look the same. Not the 2017 version of the standard, but the 2005. As mentioned earlier, there are these other modules. I'll talk about them a little later, but right now we'll talk about module two, both the management requirements and the technical requirements. So one thing I want to point out is for organization in the TNI, laboratories might already be familiar with having to have, you know, like a, you know, different things in their organization, but the TNI requires not only to have policies and procedures, so things need to be updated and documented, but they have specific requirements within that part. So for example, they require a procedure and policy on customer confidential information. So there needs to be something on how information is managed to maintain confidentiality. It also requires protecting the electronic storage of results. So there needs to be a policy and procedure on that. There's a lot of things to think about when it comes to that. There's access, protecting with passwords, how to deal with software updates. I'm not going to read through all of these, but there's backups, how to deal with those, how changes are made and controlled, how workstations, if they have to be protected if they're unattended, all that information. And there's a lot of requirements sprinkled out throughout the TNI standard with requirements that apply to this. So whoever's implementing the new policies and procedures, they need to kind of mine out all these requirements throughout the TNI standard and document it in some sort of policy and procedure for electronic data management. The other thing it has is about transmission of results. You know, a lot of times you see these emails where it says, hey, if you accidentally got this and you're not supposed to, please let us know and delete all information, which is all, it's a good part of that. But also there needs to be a policy and procedure on the actual transmission, what's allowable, how it's controlled. So for example, if it's transmitted through email, do you require it to be encrypted? Do you require receipt confirmation? If you use an FTP site or a laboratory portal, how is it controlled to prevent unintended recipients? You know, can other labs see other labs' information? Is there a timeline it's made available before it's not available anymore? If there are changes, how is that either identified or communicated? You know, all that information. Same with email. Do you require receipt confirmation so you can know that they got it? If it's an FTP portal or something like that, do you have some way of knowing that the people retrieve the information? Also for organization, with the earlier articles of the California regs, you're probably required to define your organization. So every lab's probably used to that, but makes the TNI actually specifies that it has to include technical operations and support services. So there might be changes where you wanna make sure LIMS personnel are there, purchasing, project manager, you know, maybe you have a waste management officer, all that information needs to be in the org chart. The other major thing is that the TNI requires appointing deputy of key managerial personnel. So the laboratory not only needs to define their key managerial personnel, but then they need to appoint them somehow. So that needs to be recorded how they've appointed deputies for those personnel. For organization, there's a lot of requirements in there to make sure they're documented in a policy or procedure. One of the things I pulled out just as an example of the kinds of things that need to be captured is that there's a requirement that the laboratory's technical manager, if they're out of the office for a certain amount of days, there needs to be someone appointed. If they're out of the office for 35 days, they need to be pretty much someone else put in that role, and then the primary crediting body needs to be notified. So it's very important that the laboratory captures this in their program and monitors it. So if that person's gone for these different amount of days, the applicable actions are taken. Another thing about management is data integrity systems. So the laboratory needs to establish one. They need to establish procedures. It needs to be signed and dated by management. So, you know, laboratories sometimes have procedures that are signed by QA or other people, but this one has to be signed by the top management, and it needs to be reviewed annually. So if a laboratory's procedure review frequency is every 2 years or every 3 years, this would be an exception that they need to make sure it's annually reviewed. So it is a common finding with T&I assessments that there was no evidence that management reviewed the data integrity procedures annually or that they updated them. So just make sure you're aware of these requirements, you've developed your data integrity system, and that management reviews it annually and documents that. If there's no changes, there's no changes, but it needs to be identified that way. Also under management, there's a lot of requirements about what goes in the quality manual. You'll see sometimes when I have sections here, I have these little highlighted like A through I and A through R. That means that identifies that there's a lot of stuff in here, and I just picked out a few to kind of give an idea of what I would think some labs may not currently have in their manual. It's very detailed and prescriptive in the T&I, so as you're implementing your program, make sure that you're looking at all these sections and making sure your quality manual has all the required information. One item I kind of picked out for attention is that if the laboratory uses electronic signatures, they need to have a policy on how that's used, how they control them, who can use them, all that information. Another thing in management is that laboratories shall maintain SOPs that accurately reflect all phases of current laboratory activities. That may have been a given before with the regulations, but you know, it includes not just test methods, it includes corrective actions, handling customer complaints, data integrity, document control. Every aspect of the laboratory has to be maintained in some sort of procedure or policy on how it's done and how it's controlled and who's responsible for doing different activities in that SOP. So it's a much a common finding when we do T&I assessments. The assessor will go out in the lab, they'll ask, you know, the analysts how they do things or records control or sample receipt. A lot of times there's what we call process creep, either for improvements people have made or to make something streamlined, or maybe they just forgot to do it and they just stopped doing it. But you know, through interviews, the assessor will find differences in what the SOP says versus activities. The new activity might be the right way to do it. It's not the same as what the SOP says. If we find a lot of those as an assessor and they've been happening for quite a long time, then it's the assessor starts looking into whether the SOP reviews have been adequate. You know, are people just skimming through it? Or are they really making sure not only does it meet requirements, but is it being implemented the way they think it is? And whether internal audits are adequate, because internal audits should be doing finding those, you know, those deficiencies, not the assessor. Also in management, if a test has a modification to the published method, there's a lot of requirements listed here in the T&I about what needs to be done to verify that the modification is acceptable and how to document the modification in a procedure. So if you do have any modifications, Your program needs to be updated to make sure that you have records, that you met all the requirements on verifying the modification, and then documenting it in the procedure. One thing on document control that might be different than using the California regs is that there is a requirement that you not only have internally generated documents in your document control program, but you also have external sources. So those might include the TNI standard, and if you're using the TNI full, the PGLA policies and procedures. And you have to remember that even the external sources fall under the document control program, which includes reviewing. It might not be the same detail regarding procedures. You want to look to see they meet the requirements and that also they're being implemented as expected, but you would want to make sure that on your document revision list, which we'll talk about a little later, that you have the most current rev. If it is, then you can just say you're good to go probably because you've already reviewed your program against it. But if you notice a new revision out there, then you'll want to review your program against the new revision and then update your document control program to show that you're compliant to that revision. So this is an important one to be aware of because the laboratory is responsible to make sure they have that information. A common finding might be that an SOP references an instrument manual. So that instrument manual belongs in the document control program. It needs to have a unique ID. It might not need to be reviewed, but you need to make sure it's available to all personnel and that you have the right manual for the instrument. And if you have any software updates, you know, did the manual change? And then also, like I said earlier, PGLA policies, TNI standards, other things like that need to be part of the document control program. Also under document control, I mentioned the master list, but there's a lot of requirements for document control that they're approved. The master list has the current revision status and it's controlled so to preclude the use of invalid or obsolete documents. Most laboratories might already have this set up, but you know, make sure there's a good master list and that it's kept up to date because it is a common finding that the master list is not kept up to date and the assessor finds either missing procedures, usually they're the kind of odd ones we just talked about, or they haven't been updated when there are new revs. So a master list needs to be maintained and it needs to be accurate and current. Another item in document control is that they have to be periodically reviewed. There's not a set time frame in the TNI standard. So if a laboratory decides 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, it's up to them. I've never seen anyone go more than 3 years and I would not recommend more than 3 years. And it's all dependent on the maturity of the program. So if it's a new program, you might want to review them more frequently as you're adjusting and maturing. And then as the program matures, there might be a less, you know, every 2 years or 3 years, or you might have test procedures be annually and administrative procedures be every 3 years. You have to develop that, but you just have to document what you've adopted for your review frequency. And then also make sure invalid and obsolete documents are removed from point of use. One of the common findings related to that is, we already talked about annual reviews, but is that obsolete versions of procedures are commonly found in lab areas because personnel will print the procedure to make notes. So when you have to have in your document control program some way to identify if the analyst still wants that procedure at their desk to identify that it's not a controlled copy. For document control, there is more detailed prescribed requirements than the TNI. They need to be uniquely identified. They have to have the date of issue or revision. They have to have page numbering, and they have to have the total number of pages or some way to signify the end of the document and the issuing authority. So we do see procedures out there that don't have all this information, so make sure all procedures are updated to have all the required information. This isn't all of it. There's more in the TNI standard, but I pulled this out just to communicate some of the things that will have to be thought of when you're updating your document control program. And then that's a common finding about not having the page numbering or issuing authorities. record reviews. There's a lot of requirements on contract review. There needs to be a procedure for it. It needs to be, records need to be maintained of the review. So a lot of times you guys get contracts, but now you have to actually record that someone reviewed it and have a policy and procedure on what they need to be looking at. If the laboratory is subcontracting, it has to be in writing. Approval has to be obtained from the customer. And whatever lab is being subcontracted to, there has to be a record that the laboratory evaluated them to be compliant with the standard. You'll notice there's just a lot of record, document, procedure requirements in the T&I. So here for purchasing services, there needs to be a process for that. And it needs to cover anything that affects quality. So for example, standards and calibration. For standards, obviously a laboratory would want a report. For the T&I and even California reg, you would want it traceable to the SI, which usually people say NIST traceable. That's not really the accurate way to say it, but for the purpose of this webinar, I'll say NIST traceable. You'll want uncertainty of results. You'll want some sort of date so you know when it expires. And you want traceability between the report and the item. And I'll explain why later. For calibration, you'll want all those same things, but also you want, if you approve the calibrator based on their accreditation, you want traceability that they use that program. I'll explain that later. You'll want the calibration range. I'll explain that later. Tolerances, you want the as found condition if this equipment has been in use, because you want to make sure if the as found was out of tolerance that you can evaluate whether there was impact to data since it was last calibrated. And the frequency, because the 17025 does not permit the calibration supplier to identify a due date unless it's agreed to by the client. So all those things need to be communicated to the supplier, but then also the T&I requires you to have a process for receiving items and confirming they're compliant with the requirements and then recording that. So when a laboratory receives their calibration report, certificate of analysis, whatever they're receiving, they need to have a procedure on who receives it, how they receive it, and how they document that it met requirements. So when we go back to these things I just talked about, when a report, a certificate of analysis or calibration report is received, there needs to be a process on what they're looking for. If these things are flowed down in the PO, then it really makes it easy for the receipt person to just pull the PO and make sure the report says NIST traceable, make sure there's uncertainty, make sure there's a date, make sure it's traceable to the item, and they can check all these things for the calibration. And then there needs to be a record that they did that. It could be check marks and an initial and date, however the laboratory decides to do that, but there needs to be evidence that someone checked to make sure this stuff works. I go to labs a lot where they just take the report and put it in a drawer, and I'll show you some examples about why that is not the good process for a laboratory. So one example is that I was just this year, I think it was this year, not long ago, a really good certificate analysis from accredited reputable company. And there was no date anywhere. There was no ship date, no expiration date, no date of certification. So when I got the certificate, when I requested it, because it was a standard that was being used, I couldn't tell, how old it was or when it came. So when you look here and I say, you should make sure there's a date, and you think that's common sense, but here's an example where it wasn't there. So the receipt person should have caught that and done something about it, turned it back, had them resubmit it. Here's one of my favorite examples that I put in all my trainings. Here's a report that actually had a statement that the supplier didn't take accountability for anything about this report. So the receipt person should have seen that and kicked it back right away. Another thing about calibration, I talked earlier, if you approve a calibrator by their accreditation, you need to make sure the report identifies they follow their accreditation process. So here's an example where you can go to an accredited supplier but not get an accredited report. And a lot of times people will say, oh, but it said, they're 17025, but they always have this however statement afterwards saying, unless they say they follow the accreditation process, then this is not accredited report. So make sure that that's flowed down. This is important because the calibration suppliers usually have a few options on the level of calibration you can purchase. And a lot of people misunderstand that NIST traceable is an acceptable calibration, and it's not. You need an accredited calibration. So this also allows, if the purchaser selected NIST traceable calibration, that maybe the calibration supplier will see this in your PO and say, oh, you picked the wrong level of calibration. You need accredited calibration. So that flows down in the requirement about flowing down requirements and then also receipt. Another example that I just had recently, because this was, I don't know if you can see the initials, this was just in March. There was a standard being used in the lab. It was in all the records. So I asked for the certificate of analysis and they couldn't find it. And long story short, it turned out that the certificate of analysis had a different lot number than the item that was received. The numbers were switched, but I have had instances where actually a laboratory did not receive the same lot of the certificates of analysis they received. So the receipt people need to make sure that there's traceability between the record and the items actually received. This lab had this standard in use for over a year. So every record they had identified the wrong lot number, and they had to go back and change a lot of things. So if you find that in receipt, it just saves a lot of time. And when I talk about calibration range, communicating that in purchase, this is a common one. Well, people will go to VWR or Fisher Scientific, order a calibration that meets their needs. Maybe they need to use it for a freezer, or you know, when they're heating something at 65 degrees, this thermometer meets their needs. They get an accredited report, but when they get the report, it's only from 0 to 50. And I commonly find this, if receipt personnel had the range and checked the range, they would have caught this. This is because these are just mass produced and mass calibrated, and they only calibrate them at the common use. So you really have to communicate that you actually need, you know, a higher range, like minus, you know, 30 to 70 if you're using it for freezers and for ovens at 65. So that's what I mean regarding range, you know, calibration range, flowing that down to the calibration supplier. Another thing about purchasing that the TNI requires is the laboratory has to approve vendors, evaluate them, approve them, and maintain records of the evaluation and a list of approved suppliers. So there should be something identifying, you know, if you have a calibration service, who they are, what commodity the vendors were approved for, how they were approved, and then when they need to be reevaluated. So if you approve someone based on accreditation, your reevaluation date might be the expiration date of that accreditation. If you approve someone based on auditing them, based on their quality management system, your process should identify at what frequency those should be done, annually, triannually. I wouldn't go more than triannually. Reference material, I've seen people approve them based on performance and verification of COAs, but then you need a process for that, which we just talked about, you know, making sure the COA meets requirements, and then you have to document the performance, like somehow show that you're checking them against a, you know, reference material you already have or something, and maintaining those records. And then one of the common findings is, you know, the assessor will go out, they'll be picking calibrated items and standards, and they don't find those suppliers on the approved supplier list. Be careful when you're using Fisher or VWR, you have to be approving the actual vendor performing the quality work. So you might get things from, you know, like VWR calibrated equipment is actually calibrated by a control company. Service to the client, the TNI requires you to seek feedback. So this is completely different from complaints. There needs to be two processes, one about complaints and then one about seeking feedback. Feedback can be both positive and negative. So just be aware that those are two separate things, and the TNI does require laboratories to seek feedback and have a process for how often they do that, what they do with the results, all that information. And that's a common finding, that laboratories are not seeking the feedback. They're only dealing with complaints. Regarding complaints, Just make sure you have a policy for that. The TNI standard has a lot of requirements in there about how to handle them and what to do with them. But there needs to be a process for that. And that seems like common sense, but I did have one where I was reviewing an amended report, looking at the report and talking to personnel. It was obviously from a complaint, but there was nothing about handling complaints and there was no records of the complaint for them to trend complaints, nothing. So everyone had told me there were no complaints, but then when I looked at this report, there were obviously complaints. You know, you might want to define what a complaint is. 17025 says a complaint is an expression of dissatisfaction to a laboratory relating to activities or results where a response is expected. But you can define what a complaint is, and then it needs to go through your process. I'm going to go through this really quickly because a lot of this should be common sense, but TNI does require a process and it does require specific actions. If an item does not meet specifications, action needs to be taken, an evaluation of significance. What we mean by that is, here's an example where I was looking at a temperature monitoring record. Their criteria was 0 to 6 and everything was out of that. They had a good reason why it was okay, but there was no evidence of the evaluation of significance, why it does not impact samples or and why it did not need to go through a corrective action process. So you need to have that evaluation of significance. It may not end up being a corrective action, but it needs to be documented why it's okay. For example, if a balance is out of tolerance at 80 grams, but you only use it up to 50 grams and the 50 gram is okay, then that would be your evaluation of significance that you don't use it above 50 grams, so no corrective action needed. There needs to be cause analysis when there's corrective action. Just be aware that, you know, cause like insufficient training and then having retrain analysis for accrediting bodies is not acceptable because we're just gonna come back, say this was that they didn't record something. They fixed the finding, the symptom, which was they fixed records to make sure they record it. And then they said the root cause was insufficient training. Well, now the assessor is gonna ask how you changed your training program, because if it was insufficient before, how is it sufficient now? Same with this one we just had. I just saw this, every corrective action said lack of knowledge. You know, the findings might've been things were out of spec or the procedure didn't have this in it. And everything said lack of knowledge. So then I went, you know, want to go back and say, well, you know, you fixed the symptoms, but how did you fix the root cause? Did you have training? Did you have a consultant come in? You know, what is it? So the 5 whys are the most common way to kind of at least feel confident you've narrowed down to not just the reason for the symptom, but the root cause. But always make sure you can have an immediate corrective action for the symptom, but then a long-term corrective action is for the root cause. You have to monitor corrective actions. So TNI requires monitoring of them. We do commonly have findings where we'll come back after an assessment and we look at the previous corrective actions. California requires us to go back through 2 of them. If we find repeated nonconformities, that usually means they weren't monitored. So the laboratory doesn't only do a corrective action, but they have to monitor them for effectiveness. And then there's also requirement about additional audits. I usually use the term extent of condition. It's not really a formal audit, but when there's something, a nonconformity identified, the laboratory needs to check to make sure it's not existing somewhere else. We're only there and we find symptoms, but it might be in other areas. So here's an example where I had a finding. I retyped this, but the logbooks weren't reviewed quarterly in compliance with their program in these areas. But in their response, they identified that they did additional audits and they found 3 more. So it shows me they were following that process about additional audits. Control of records, original observations is something you need to pay attention to if you're not used to it. If a laboratory is writing things on a piece of paper or notes, these are the original observations. So these are the records. So make sure you have a program in place where personnel have the actual record they can write on that's convenient for them and it's captured. Another thing to consider is thermometers. Laboratories sometimes use correction factors. and they only record the corrected temp, but the original observation is the one the personnel observed on the unit. So if correction factors are implemented by program, the laboratory needs to record the original observation and then the corrected temperature. Control of records is a lot of information, but just make sure that everything on a record is traceable to something so it can provide an audit trail and all factors affecting that information is identified. This is a common finding. Things to think about is when balances are being verified, the weight set ID needs to be identified. If items are being monitored for temperature, the thermometer ID needs to be there, lot numbers need to be identified. Who did it when? Model numbers are not a good way to identify equipment because if you happen to buy another one, even 10 years down the road, you lost that traceability. So unique IDs or laboratory assigned IDs, if you know serial numbers are too long and hard to deal with, you might have, you know, for balances, BAL 1 and BAL 2, but some sort of unique ID is required on all records. I always tell people that when you look at a record, you need to be able to identify who did it, when they did it, and every number on that record needs to be associated with something traceable to where it came from. Control of records, things can't be erased or made illegible. Everything has to be legible, whether it was a mistake or not, and then all corrections need to be signed and initialed. So for example, this would not be in compliant with the TNI because you cannot see that original result. This is important because I've had people change the wrong sample and realize they meant to change another sample. And unless you can see what the original result was, you can't fix it to go back to what they had seen before. This also applies to making things reproducible. A lot of people think that means someone can, you know, make it look the same, but actually it means that they can be copied or scanned without losing information. So this is an example where the person in red pen changed from a 2 to a 3. You can pretty much tell, but once it's copied, you can't tell. So these are things to consider, and your policies and procedures need to address those. Also for records, there's a lot of requirements about retention time. Archive information needs to be controlled and documented with an access log. So it needs to say who went in there, what date, what they retrieved, and when they brought it back. There also needs to be a log of initials and dates and signatures that are traceable to records. So we do have findings where we pull records and then we ask for this log and we can't find out who it is because they don't agree. So internal audits need to be keep checking this in case people have, you know, they might have a good day signature and initial and a bad day signature and initial, and they both need to be on there so that they're traceable to the person who performed the activity. And just, you know, go through the TNI and make sure that all your policies and procedures are updated to have all these requirements, and then make sure they're implemented. I'm going to be going through these quickly, but again, I'm just trying to let you know that there are a lot of details and requirements in the TNI that a laboratory may not be used to if they were just California reg. For internal audits, the TNI requires all elements of the management system, not just testing. So that's training, records, purchasing, sample receipt, data review, reporting, corrective action. All those elements need to be reviewed in the internal audit annually. And it's a common finding that we look at audits and the person didn't look at sample receipt or purchasing or those kinds of things. LIMS is really important to be auditing and checking, you know, for any attempts to get in the system, that the backup's working correctly, you know, all that information. The audits have to be done by a trained and qualified personnel. So we do have findings where, you know, section 5.2 of the standard has a requirement that management has to formulate goals for training. So there has to be something in the program as what's expected for qualification of an internal auditor. And then there needs to be records that the auditor did meet that training requirement. Management reviews, there's a lot of requirements. Laboratories sometimes just have these specific headers in their management review to make sure they cover them, but there's a inputs and outputs that are required. And if the laboratory decides to do 17025, there's even more. So make sure the management reviews meet all of the inputs and outputs of the TNI, because the California ELAP did not have specific requirements for that. Also, I'm just pointing out that there is a difference between customer feedback and complaints, and both of those need to be evaluated during the management review. Personnel, there's requirements on job descriptions. The TNI goes into great detail about what's required in job descriptions, and it also requires records that personnel were authorized to do the activities they're performing. The exception in Module 2 is regarding the technical manager. If you're doing minus 2, just make sure you're following the CCR Article 2 requirements. If you go on TNI Full, there's many different educational and qualification requirements depending on the type of lab. So just make sure you go to that section and make sure the quality manager meets those requirements. Personnel, data integrity is the big one that most laboratories won't be used to, but there needs to be a formalized data integrity training. It needs to be done annually. You can't just say these people attended. They actually have to sign or do something to say they understand their obligations. And there's a lot of requirements, this A through E, that needs to be in the data integrity training. But one I just pulled out was there has to be specific examples of breaches of ethical behavior. So data manipulation or adjusting time, you know, those kinds of things. There have to be specific examples in that training. And so it's a common finding that either we didn't find current annual training for someone, or it didn't include all personnel that may have some sort of contribution or access or communication of data in some form or fashion. So all personnel that have anything to do with data needs to be part of that training. Equipment and environmental conditions. A lot of this is common sense, but just make sure you go through the standard and you have a program in place to be in compliant with all the requirements for fume hoods and monitoring environmental conditions and cold storage. If there's a validation of methods, there's a lot of requirements on validation of methods and uncertainty, especially if there's modifications, which I brought up earlier, but make sure your procedures and your process has all this method validation in it and that you have records that you're compliant with it. Equipment, we already kind of went over this, but if something doesn't meet specification, it needs to be either taken out of service or examined to see the effect of previous results. We talked about that earlier, so I won't get into too much into it, but just also make sure things are clearly labeled if they are out of service to prevent someone from using them. It needs to be capable of achieving accuracy and comply with specifications. And there's all these records, there's this A through H of what needs to be maintained on equipment, including the software version and the manufacturer name. And there needs to be some sort of equipment log or something with all the information that TNI requires. And it also needs to be label coded or otherwise identified. What this means is, if there's a thermometer or balance out there that maybe doesn't require calibration because of how it's used, it needs to be labeled to prevent inadvertent use. So, you know, label it indication only or not for quality purposes, or if it can only be used for a certain range, like that thermometer thing I showed you earlier, if it's only calibrated from 0 to 50, it should say limited cal 0 to 50 if it looks like someone could use it at ranges other than that. I'm not going to go through this, but there's a lot of prescriptive requirements on equipment regarding how often they're verified, what's an acceptable verification. The big thing is that everything needs to be checked bracketing the range of use. That is a common finding, that things aren't checked bracketing the range of use. Like a freezer thermometer needs to be checked at that range, you know, not using a thermometer checked at 0 to 50. But make sure your program's updated to have these requirements and that they're being implemented. Same with traceability. There needs to be records for everything. One warning is a lot of laboratories rely on COAs being available on the vendor's website, but that does not meet the record retention requirements because you do not have the capability to make sure it's there as long as you need it there and that it's always available for you. So laboratories need to get those certificates of analysis so they're in their record program. And also, PGLA and other accrediting bodies, they all have their own policies on traceability and uncertainty. So if you're going for the full TNI, there will be other requirements for that accrediting body for traceability. I won't be covering collection of samples here. Handling samples and test items. There's a lot of requirements. Again, like I keep saying, you need to have a documented program on how this is done, a written sample acceptance policy, and the policies and procedures also have to talk about disposal of samples, including digestate, leachate, all that information. Ensuring environmental testing. Laboratory, the TNI requires the laboratory to monitor tests and look for trends. So this is another difference that laboratories might not be used to. There's a difference between maintaining control charts and monitoring for trends. So the program needs to document how trends are monitored. There's a lot of trend rules out there, you know, that you can look for. I just picked a few that, you know, would be the minimal you want to look for. And then the program needs to identify what you do if there is a trend. But don't just pull control charts to see when things are out of, you know, the limits, but there needs to be monitoring for trends and defining what a trend is. There's a lot of requirements for reporting of results. I just picked out a few, but if their reports need to have a unique identification, they need to clearly identify the end of the report. If there's an amendment, it needs to clearly identify that. And if there's results that are not part of the accredited scope, those need to be clearly identified. So I'm just going to go over, like I said, module four. There's 3 through 7, depending on your scope, but I'm just going to go over a few things on module four to give you an idea of the level of detail and requirements in the TNI that the laboratory is going to have to consider. So module four has a lot of different requirements. There's limit of detection. So LOD and DL and LOQ will be acronyms that you'll get very familiar with. There's initial and ongoing requirements for doing your sensitivity, which is your limit of quantitation and LODs. It requires you to look at precision and bias. So you're not just looking at your recovery, but you're looking at the precision of all the recoveries. There's demonstration of capability, which requires initial and ongoing of your analysts, and it requires precision and accuracy. So again, you're not just looking at did they recover results within a percent recovery, but a long-term precision of those recoveries. There's specifics on quality control. So for example, initial calibration, you have to have a procedure addressing how to remove standards if you need to. There's a minimum number of calibration standards required depending on if you use linear or quadratic. And you have to use measurement of relative error in the calibration, which is a new requirement. And a lot of laboratories are having difficulty with it. But for the sake of time, I won't go into it. But each standard has to be evaluated for relative of error in the calibration before you can proceed with your analytical results. CCV, some things to point out is it has to be less than half the highest level of the calibration. So if you remove standards and need to make sure the CCV still meets that requirement, and it has to be at the beginning and end of each batch. There's other requirements. I'm just pointing out some of the main ones to kind of, you know, bring your attention to the specifics of the TNI standard. For blanks, it needs to consist of a quality system matrix. So you can't use a liquid blank for a solid sample analysis. A lot of labs use Ottawa sand or beads. If you don't have a process in place now, it's going to take you some time to figure out how you want to deal with that. So these are things you really need to read through the standard and point these out so you can figure out the best way. And of course, that means validation of method, right? You know, depending on what you choose, you need to validate that method and document all the stuff in compliance to those requirements. Okay, so TNI resources. I know I went through that fast, but the point was for you to just be aware there's a lot of prescriptive requirements and a lot of required policies and procedures to be implemented, and they need to be done before the assessment to be compliant to TNI. Some resources to help you really get familiar with the requirements is on TNI. They have a lot of guidance documents, implementation resources. They have those FOPT tables I talked about for the PTs. They have standard interpretation results, requests that are in there and their answers. And they also have training available. So I highly encourage anyone who's responsible for implementing the program to use those resources. PJLA also has resources. They have different documents and information to look at on there. If a laboratory decides to choose the full TNI, there will be different policies and procedures that are applicable to them, like the SOP1 for accreditation and the TNI accreditation procedure, but this is where you would find those. Either way, you might want to look at it just to get ideas on information. And then also TNI has webinars. For example, coming up May, there's information about proficiency testing requirements. And then this webinar will be available. There's a section on past webinars. I encourage you to go in there and, you know, even though this is 17025, you know, if you look at the internal audits one or different ones about that, it still will help you with TNI because TNI is based on 17025. It's a 2005 version, but a lot of it's still the same. So those still will be helpful, even though they're not specifically TNI. So I know I went through that fast, but Tracy, are there any questions to answer? I don't see any. I don't hear you.
Sorry about that. I needed to unmute. Thank you, Julie. I know there's a lot of information to go through in a short period of time. We do have some questions that just came in, and feel free if everyone has any other ones why we're reading through these. Just give me a second and I'll go ahead and pull those for you, okay?
Okay.
Okay. What is a bioassay laboratory? I think this is worded wrong a little bit, but I think they're asking what is a bioassay laboratory would like to go to the TNI full, but there's only one PT study per year available.
So, that would be one of those little case by case basis things, but if I might not answer this totally correctly, but if you're going TNI minus two, which is not the accreditation, it's just the TNI minus two, then you only have to do the one per year. If you're going TNI full, then it pulls you into the PJLA policies, and that would then throw you into needing to do either an intralab or an repeatability study to account for that second one, or you might get a variance regarding the two. It would just all depends on the actual test and availability, and it would fall into the PJLA policy because the TNI TNI within it says if, you know, achievable or available. So I think the main thing would be you would just only have to do it once, but if the PJLA policy falls into place, we might just have you do like an intralab or repeatability, and even the other ABs have the same requirements regarding the PTs. Okay. I don't know if that answered it. Hopefully it did.
Yeah, I think so. All right, here's a couple more questions for you. And I can help with this one too if you like, but how do I determine if we are TNI full? We do not test for metals or organics. I can help with this one if you don't mind. So I think a lot of the confusion with the roadmap here is the California Water Boards has, if you're doing high sophisticated techniques, which maybe it sounds like you're not, they're still planning on doing some assessments for some time. But if they are doing, laboratories are doing high sophisticated techniques, they had said that as of just last October, they're going to stop doing assessments. As far as the standards go, there by 2023, you only need to obtain TNI minus two. You do not have to ever at this point get the full TNI standard. So that's where the confusion sits. So right now, you know, in 2021, if you had an application that was going to expire and you had high sophisticated techniques, you actually have a few options. You can get the California regs only. You can get the TNI minus two, it meets the California minimum requirements, or you could decide to get the full TNI standard. However, what everyone needs to understand is by 2023, when you submit your application in, everyone has to be at least TNI minus two to meet the California requirements. I don't know, Julie, if you have anything else to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, the TNIs, either one doesn't really, isn't technology dependent. Doesn't matter, you know, what tests you do, there just might not be as many prescriptive requirements. But yeah, the TNI, the tech, I kind of pulled this, I couldn't figure out how to just go to a slide, but I think over here, oh no, I think I took all that out. I had the technologies in there, but I took them out. But yeah, it's, let me go back to this slide. So TNI minus two, regardless of technology, the laboratory has to do TNI minus two by 2023. And TNI is not technology based, except for those modules, you know, radiochemical, that information, but the module one and two would apply regardless of what technology or type of methods you're doing.
Right, and just let everyone know, we are, you know, right now there's some laboratories that still are meeting the California regs, so we are doing the renewals for some of those laboratories. And at the same time, or a separate assessment might offer with a pre-assessment to the TNI standards, so the following year they're ready to transition over and be ready for that TNI minus two assessment. Okay, slide 54. Who is the customer for an in-house municipal drinking water or wastewater lab? Slide 54, they're referencing.
Yeah, I wish I knew how to just go to a slide. I know this is probably, everyone's getting dizzy when I do this. But to just start answering that question, I can't confidently answer who are customers for certain things. Why would they need one or the other? I would assume that would be for, I can't remember what the question was, but for that would probably be for customers that are actually dealing with that. You know, if they're dealing with drinking water, they're dealing with discharge of drinking water or discharge of water. Slide 54. Did you say slide 54?
That's just what the question said. Yes, slide 54. Who is the customer for in-house municipal drinking water or wastewater lab?
Huh, I don't see where it says anything in that, but yeah, I can't really confidently say what kind of customer would want what, but I would assume for municipal drinking water would be sort those that, you know, the your water suppliers and things like that to test the water to show that it can go out to the public.
Okay. ALAC requires the temperature measuring devices to be calibrated once every 2 years. Now that's, ALAC is for the food. I think that's what they're referring to. This could be related to food and pharmaceutical check guidelines we use.
Yeah, so if
a comment, but.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, you know, there are other requirements, like I talked about the drinking water, TNIs, PT can be by technology, but the drinking water, CFRs is by method. Same thing on anything. If you have a more prescriptive requirement from something else, obviously you want to follow that. But if you have a least prescriptive requirement from something else, you need to follow the most prescriptive requirement. So if there's something out there that says you can do something every 2 years, but TNI for temperature devices has to be annually, then you'll need to follow the annually, unless you want to separate programs. But that gets complicated, and I always see things fall out of compliance when labs try to do that. But you know, if you're confident you can do that, you could separate programs. This measuring device is only for this program. If you went to DOD, DOE, QSM, they require them quarterly. So yeah, you wanna make sure you know all requirements that apply, not just TNI, and that you use the most prescriptive requirement.
Okay, is contracting a third party for internal audit mandatory?
Their internal audits are there's nothing saying you have to use a third party for internal audits. What we're talking here is about using a third party for the assessment, the accreditation assessment. Those are completely different things. The laboratory is responsible to do their own internal audits. They can hire a contractor to do that if they want. It's not the best way to do it because you still need to make sure your program is compliant with different requirements, and you just want to make sure the contractor is aware of all the external requirements in addition to making sure that the activities are being followed per the program. But internal audits are different than what we're talking about now. It's part of the TNI standard, and laboratories are responsible to do internal audits, but there's no requirement on contracting it out. The laboratories do that themselves, or if they wanted to hire a contractor, they could. It's just not recommended.
Okay, going back to the question, it was up slide 54. The person who asked the question just responded. So maybe it wasn't slide 54, but I think what they were referring to about who their customers are, when it was something on your slide about customer feedback or complaints.
Oh. So was the question?
The original question where it said slide 54, who is the customer for in-house municipal drinking water or wastewater lab?
In-house. Okay. So the customer would probably be almost, I don't want to say this is equal, but you kind of treat it like personnel feedback. You know, you would just go throughout the lab and just make sure they have an opportunity to provide feedback. It could be a feedback box, you know, hey, give us your feedback. It's anonymous if you want. But that one gets a little bit less formal, I guess. But if you have an internal customer, you still want to have some way for a process for them to communicate, you know, and for you to capture that. It could be a very simple, like I said, a feedback box or something if they're internal. But that one doesn't get as complicated as if you have real customers, but you'll want something, you know, for them to be able to know how to provide feedback and then for you guys to capture it.
Okay. Then we have, does the OSA still schedule by ELAP, or is the laboratory responsible to schedule it? So I think that, does the OSA, is it still scheduled by ELAP, or is the laboratory responsible to schedule it? Okay, the on-site assessment. So so if you're required to use a third-party assessor body, we're the ones who are going to schedule that. If you look at the California requirements and the MOUs that are actually available, it shows the process. So what will happen is when you get ready to apply, you have a time frame you have to apply to renew every, when you're about to expire, and it has a list of things that you need to provide to the state, which is your report, items that you receive from your accreditation, third party accreditation organization. So you work directly with that TPA. So you would work directly with us to schedule your assessment. They would just want your report when you send in your application.
Correct. Yeah. So the laboratory is responsible to pick their accrediting body and then make sure they schedule with the accrediting body and provide a good amount of time, because, you know, it takes scheduling assessors and having schedules, you know, meet each other and all that information. So you want to start like at least, what did you say, it's like 6 months in advance to at least get it scheduled.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to have your report, you know, just think about that. If you have to have a report sent in within so much time before you expire, don't wait, you know, the day, you know, the week before you have to submit that. I mean, you have to give us time, you know, at least if you're about to expire in 6 months, you need to be applying now so you can get on the schedule.
Yeah, and it's also dependent on maturity of the program. So if a laboratory that's only been California reg, obviously there's a lot of changes once the laboratory goes into the TNI. So it's not a mature program. So there could be a lot of things identified, maybe not, but there could be. So you want to count for time there too, to be able to, you know, implement those corrective actions and identify how the program is going to be updated.
Okay, next question. You mentioned personnel requirements of a quality manager. What if the organization has a QA officer and a QA and data management team manager who is supposed to be the quality manager per T&I requirement if no education requirement or years of QA experience for the quality manager?
So this just goes back to that requirement in section 5 where it says the laboratory shall formulate goals for training and qualifications of personnel. So the laboratory will need to identify what they determine to be a qualification for the quality manager. The specific requirements are for technical manager and the T&I. Quality manager, there are responsibilities identified in there, and they have to be aware, you know, they have to be knowledgeable of quality programs and the test methods. But the laboratory itself will identify how they make sure they determine if the quality manager meets their expectations, as long as they show that the quality manager does know quality elements and those test methods that the T&I requirements. But the T&I is not very prescriptive on quality manager. It's only technical manager that they're more prescriptive on education and qualifications.
Okay, so there was another question that came in. So what you're saying is the organization needs to determine that, it's not the assessor who determines that criteria, it's the organization who decides that.
Correct. The only time the assessor might have an issue with what the laboratory determined as qualifying is if there were obviously a lot of problems with the system. But that would be more that just the quality manager wasn't, you know, the program itself wasn't being implemented, but that's the only time the assessor could really kind of have a say or input on the qualifications of the managers if the program is just really in bad shape. But still, the laboratory formulates the goals. The assessor just might say they didn't formulate goals very well. But we do a lot of times find, I mean, I at least a couple times a year, you know, I look at job descriptions and the goals, and then I look at the records of what they've done, and they don't match both education, things like that. So when the lab formulates goals, they need to make sure they're meeting those goals.
Right. Okay, I think that's all we have time for today. And I think we got through most of our questions. We did have some comments that were sent in, but appreciate everyone's time. Julie, thank you for your detailed presentation. This will be available shortly here on our website. So if you need a copy of the presentation, you can download that from our website under the past webinar section. And if there's any particular questions, you also could email us. I believe it's, Kristen, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's webinar@pjlabs.com, and we can answer some additional questions for you. Julie's email is jsnelling@pjlabs.com. If you have any particular questions as well, you can reach her that way. As well. So thank you very much, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.